And I can talk a little English.
Morning. I'm Jerome Maguire, member of this committee.
Morning. I'm Leonard Ramatakani, member of this committee.
It's still morning. Good day. Hey, I'm Philip Mjongo, the member of this committee.
Thanks, Sheikh. Good morning. Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. We'll ask the executive director of IPED to introduce his delegation.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. On my right hand side, the director of executive support, Antoinette Mpako. On my left is the head of national investigations, Mr. Matthew Sissoko. On his left is Vivian Seth Howley, who is the director of internal audit. Behind me is, on the extreme left there is the CFO, Ms. Lindo Gutle Ngongo. And the right behind me is Marianne Marwasri, who is the head of legal. And behind me is the head of monitoring and governance is Lindelwa Nonjaduka. And left is program for stakeholder management and integrity strengthening, Amodisha Malope. And on the left is my head of corporate services, Mam Nesianda, Nomkosi Nesianda. I think that's all of us on the chairperson.
Thank you, Executive Director. We'll just...
Oh, and there's my national spokesperson, Moses Lamini.
Thank you very much for introducing the delegation. In terms of our program, we will just ask the content advisor, Mr. Irwin Kinnis, to go through the evaluation document, what's still outstanding, as we did with the secretariat, and then we'll give an opportunity for IPED to deal with a progress report, and also then a report on high-profile cases, and then we'll go to questions. Mr. Kinnis, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I must apologize to the members. There was some technical glitch that I couldn't get the presentation onto the data projector for some reason. But this was circulated to the members yesterday. It's exactly the same format that we did for the civilian secretariat. Honorable Chair, there were 14 key recommendations for IPED. The first one related to the committee recommends that special funding be allocated and ring-fenced to the budget of the directorate for the following commission investigations. It's clear there that the response indicated that no funding is available and this has affected investigations into the following commission. And the committee, Honourable Chair, cannot allow the investigations to be stopped because of funding. Those investigations have to continue, something that the committee must now look into. To the administration, the internal audit, the committee recommends that the directorate implement the recommendations of the audit general and appoints a mandate holder with a clear time and ensure the implementation of each of the AG recommendations. IPED is supposed to report on that by the 31st of March 2017. The CFO administration, the committee recommends the directorate work towards the reduction of underspending in all its programs for the current financial year. IPED has given us a spending breakdown up to the 31st of January, Chair, and the committee must just check that IPED remains on course and that it doesn't overspend its budget. Four, the administration corporate services, the committee recommends the directorate continue with its employment of females in its senior management section where there are vacancies. They have provided us with a report on the amount of females in the senior management service, and that's the standard 47%. The fifth recommendation is that the committee recommends that the directorate improves its performance with respect to attaining its program targets for the 2016-17 financial year. Chairperson, that is something that the committee must discuss. The next recommendation, the committee recommends that the directorate implement consequence management for all those staff members who incur fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure. There appears to be some progress there in that respect, Chair, with that recommendation. The seventh recommendation is that the committee recommends the director find innovative ways of cutting its reliance on the SAPs when it comes to using equipment and tools of trade in investigations in order to preserve its independence. Again, the issue there with that recommendation, why it wasn't obtained, it appears that funding is the problem, Chair, and it's something that the committee must discuss. The next recommendation is that the committee recommends that the directorate immediately implement steps to comply with the provisions of the PFMA and the Promotion of Access to Information Act. It appears that IFAD has in that responded to that recommendation, and they will give a full report, I suppose, by the 31st of March. Similarly, with the next recommendation, which says that the committee recommends that the directorate continue with efforts to train investigators with special skills at the highest skills levels. They've given us figures of how many investigators have been trained and what is planned for 2017-18 as well, Chair. And then the committee recommends that the directorate ensures that it develops a full report on the systemic corruption issues that it has to address within the SAPS and the Metro Police environments. They have given us a report of the number of cases they're dealing with. At the moment, it appears there's only two cases, and the committee is something that the committee must flag and discuss with IFAD. 11, the committee recommends the directorate develops measures to make the SAPS members aware of the consequences of rape of victims in police cells through the public education program. If you can remember, Honourable Chair, there were rapes in police cells over the last year. That is a red flag there, Chair, because those investigations were stopped, or the public education program was stopped because of budgetary constraints. It's something that the committee must deal with. And then legal services, the committee recommends that the directorate develop a report on steps to reduce civil claims against the department. And IFAD has reported on that and what they intend to do about it, and what they've issued practice notes, and maybe they can report more on that chain, that recommendation. Thirdly, the committee recommends that the IFAD meets with the NPA to discuss what steps it plans to take to reduce the backlogs of IFAD criminal recommendations and provide the committee with a report by the 30th of March. They have given us a provisional report, Your Chair, that they have met with the NPA, and that further meetings with the provincial directors of public prosecutions are in plan. And then the last recommendation is that the committee recommends that the directorate finalize the appointment of a service provider to provide trauma debriefing service to each investigator as a matter of priority. And it appears that there's been some progress there. Those are the key recommendations that the committee has made, Chair.
Anything outstanding?
Chair, on the reporting request, if I can just go to the reporting request. Reporting matters, Chair. The one thing that's outstanding with the reporting matters here is the issue of station lectures has been put on hold. We've asked them for a report on the station lectures because of budgetary constraints. Then the second thing that was not provided was the terms of reference for municipal police in disciplinary cases. That has not been provided to the committee. And then the copies of the monthly recommendation meeting reports with SAPS, we have not received that. And the progress report on the progress of prosecutions, that wasn't implemented. And then the last one is the progress report of consultative forum meetings wasn't provided. So those four areas, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kinnis, for that report, members. I think everybody's received the report, so everybody's now on the same page for the interaction. Thank you very much, Mr. Kinnis. We'll go now to the Executive Director and his team for the presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I think before I get into the presentation, just a basic background historically on IFAD. IFAD came into existence in...
Just the microphone, maybe.
Thank you, sir. 2012-2013 financial year is the advent of IFAD and the changeover, the transition from ICT to IFAD. IFAD then having a new mandate, additional mandates, more detailed investigations required. IFAD takes its first steps as an independent organization. As it's still finding its feet, the first financial year, there's significant underspending. And then 2013-2014, it continues. There is underspending. But from 14-15, there is no underspending. There's 99% expenditure with minimal amount of accrual. In 2015-2016, it's the pattern is the 99% expenditure with limited negligible accrual. So it took 2 years of functioning of its existence during the transition from ICD to IPED to get its feet to appoint all the necessary people, and the pattern now is complete expenditure without any under expenditure. 2016-2017, the projections is that unless we mitigate it, there will be over expenditure. The over expenditure is due to a number of factors, objective factors, like the fact that we're never ever properly funded. If you look at the history of ICD, what was agreed to, and with the advent of IPED, the simple truth of the matter is that IPED is underfunded. For example, certain aspects of our program will not be completed. We had fallen commission recommendations, both pertaining to the Marikana incident and to general aspects relating to independence of IPED. For the recommendations relating to the investigation, we received no additional funding. At the moment, we require funding for reconstruction of one of the scenes. And those figures we can make available. And in our meetings with the Office of National Director of Public Prosecutions, it was agreed that we should attempt to find the funding to reconstruction. Follum also makes recommendations relating to our independence and non-reliance on SAPS for key investigative capacity. That is unlikely to be fulfilled as long as we continue to be underfunded. Since we reached our full expenditure in 15-16, there has been reduction and continuous reduction in the budget. So we are unlikely to be able to fulfill key aspects of our required independence. We've taken strategic decisions as management in the EXCO that certain activities in the fourth quarter will have to be curtailed. Otherwise, we run the risk of over-expenditure. So the lesser of the two evils is some targets will not be reached. In that way, we can defer, and we've been advised by Treasury to defer some of the payments to the new financial year. But that leaves us with an accrual of around about 8 million, which means we start the new financial year already with less budget, even less than the reduced budget we received. Okay. The purpose of the briefing is to present IPED's progress with regards to the implementation of the PCP's BRRR. And some of the stuff has already been covered by Mr. Kinnis. And we'll also cover the report on the consolidated performance, particularly in the third quarter, and how it is affected. It's been affected by budgetary constraints facing the department. The stuff I've already touched on, the budget cuts and ceilings placed by National Treasury on compensation of employees. We've had a number of posts frozen, even though we've had over years an expansion strategy approved by everyone, including the committee here. Whereas we were growing in the right direction to what was agreed upon, we're suddenly going in the opposite direction where posts have been frozen, so we cannot grow. We cannot reach the initial size that we intended to reach from inception. And in fact, we are going backwards in terms of the number of approved posts. So some of the reasons why over expenditure occurred is the, some of the transfers, the restructuring, some of the litigation that the department was involved in during the last 18 months. So now I'll... Okay, the first point there is dealing with the Farlam Commission. I've already touched on that. A lot of expenditure, unforeseen expenditure, was incurred as a result of our investigation team conducting these investigations, for which there was it was an unfunded mandate. We did not receive additional funds on it. The implementation of the recommendations of the AG, which will be covered by direct internal audit just now. Again, point three is what I've covered already, the reduction in underspending from inception. Employment of females, we had in 14-15 reached almost parity of 50%. Unfortunately, there will be a movement of staff, and with posts frozen, we need to balance. But our intention is to reach a target of 50% of females at SMS level. And future appointments, it will be made known that there will be a preference for females. The quarterly performance report will be dealt with just now also. Consequences of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. There's disciplinary actions and criminal cases initiated in some instances. The monitoring as a standing item at our management meetings of instances of fruitless and or wasteful expenditure. And it is as part of an element of a financial management would be incorporated in performance agreements of all senior staff. As I said earlier, we will be unable to achieve our full independence at both the current level of underfunding. Point 8 is related to point 6 that has been covered. We need to increase the training of our investigators. As you can see from point 9, we've had made significant progress in training investigators, but we haven't yet gone into the specialization aspects, which were some of that we intend doing in this coming financial year. Systemic corruption matters, some of them will be dealt with in the second part of our presentation. And some of that will be taken by Mr. Sesoko. On point 11, the station lectures, we are of the view that the station lectures require us to advise the police that rape is not good. We think it's not really our task to be involved in that. Police are law enforcement officers, they know the law. They enforce the law. They should know, like in everywhere else in the world, in every culture, that rape is wrong. It shouldn't be our role to be educating them about the law. So we prefer if the committee supports us in that we actually do not participate in these lectures on informing people about the law. So we'd like your support as a committee on that we refrain from that. On 12, report on steps to reduce civil claims. If just a correction there under 12. The IPED Standard operating procedures 6.5 provide for steps to follow when handling. Shouldn't be civil claims, should be arrests. We've also issued an executive director's directive about how we deal with arrests. We want to prevent having to deal with arrests unless absolutely necessary. We prefer to summon people to appear in court rather than having to go through the arrest process. Because it's our experience that where we have civil claims, it would be related to arrests. On top of that, we can't completely rule it out. Some people, when they're under investigation, resort to litigation to avoid being investigated. So we can't stop that. It's beyond our control. So some of the initiations of civil claims against us or of litigation is beyond our control. As has been mentioned already, we are engaged in regular discussions with the Office of the National Director of Public Prosecutions, and there are also meetings taking place at provincial level so that we can have a seamless relationship in which backlogs can be reduced and a better understanding of our different mandates can be achieved. We've now approved the appointment of service providers to deal with the trauma experienced by investigators. Very often investigators come onto scenes where there's been a shooting. I've dealt with, in terms of the outstanding recommendations, the station lectures, I've spoken to that. On the matter of the municipal police, I'll ask Mr. Sissoko just to deal with that one on the terms of reference. Monthly recommendation meetings, the reports on that will be provided to the committee. Progress of prosecutions and progress on the consultative forum. One issue of the consultative forum, a request was made by the civilian secretariat for a meeting of the consultative forum. Our view is that we should have a substantial agenda before we agree to a meeting which appears to be intended to tick the boxes for performance. We prefer pre-consultative forum meetings where we actually jointly establish what the agenda is so that it's a meaningful meeting and not merely a situation of ticking the boxes. So we've made that request to the civilian secretariat, and we will be meeting with them shortly to establish a date before the end of the fourth quarter to be able to engage with them on some substantial matters.
Thank you, honourable members. I'll just briefly take honourable members through the progress in terms of the AGSA findings. I think already has been noted that the reporting due date is the 31st of March. However, because of the fact that indeed some action places had due dates that had already passed, it's just to provide progress. Just in summary, we had 28 audit findings from the AGSA for 15-16. And at the time when we sent through the presentation, we had ascertained that 15 have been addressed. The information that I received through discussions afterwards is actually 16 that has been implemented. And then out of the 28, we have 7 of them where the due date was not yet upon us. So those ones that are still in progress. However, we also had 6 where due dates were already passed, but because of the interactive nature of the action plan, where you'd find that the finding is maybe more than one action plan, or in instances where an action plan requires us to be liaising with an outside stakeholders like your CIPC, we've noted some delays there, but we are keeping strike that by the end of March, where action plans are due, we would have completed them. So I'll be led by members. We have about a couple of slides with each findings and progress. Is a specific one that the members would like more information on, I'll take them and members through. Or if members prefer that I call each and every one of them, I'll be led by members on this one.
No, I think let's just go quickly through the action plan and what was done. You don't have to read, you know, the initial finding, but just in terms of progress, that we just have that on record. Thank you.
Okay. On the corporate governance, we had one finding that was related to IPIT, finding itself dealing with employees who are dealing with state. We had noted that the official, there was one official who was still registered in mother's business, that the registration process was not completed. It's actually one of the findings that we have flagged, that it appears that the status is still in progress, the registration. As far as the policies, because when we were also reviewing, we noted that maybe we needed a more stronger policy stance for employees to be aware of and to make sure that it is drilled down and it's something that on an operational level it is applied. We had also committed to have a policy on conflict of interest with the due date of end of the financial year. That is in progress. Another mechanism that came to our rescue during the audit actually was the National Treasury Database, which I think from May, based on the details from May, we no longer really source our own quotations. There's a central database from National Treasury, which assists us in identifying at that sourcing stage whether an official, a service provider has some link to a government official before we continue and do business with them. The second one was payments not made within 30 days from receipt of invoices. We deliberated quite a lot. I think the initial stance was that we must have a separate invoicing unit. In fact, that was an action plan that we had been taking through for quite some time up until the funds issues with the compensation ceiling that was imposed by Treasury came into being. We had to abandon that, freezing the invoicing unit. So what we resulted in is to make sure that each and every senior manager now, for their own responsibilities, it's noted in the performance agreement, it's one of the areas going forth, that as a manager you will be responsible to ensuring that no invoice that emanates from services provided to your section finds itself being delayed unless there are exceptional circumstances. That process has started, but of course we have not yet finalized the performance agreement. But once they are finalized for the next year, it's something that is already being implemented. The third one was the consequence management for officials who incurred irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. The ED had already touched on it, that there are already ongoing criminal cases for in other instances, and there are already some investigations that are being carried on. But as part of monitoring as well on our management meetings, it's one of the issues that has been flagged for discussion and feedback by each and every manager. Just also to add that it also now forms part of the financial management, CMC in the performance agreement of senior managers, where now it is in more detail what is it that is expected from each and every senior manager to make sure that we cap on this particular finding. And the fourth finding, this was those findings that will come through when the AG has received the draft financial statement. They had noted instances of understatement of this commitment, which at greater inspection we noted that there was some information that was not really provided by the relevant units. The financial statements were adjusted. This one is implemented. And on a quarterly basis, which has been ongoing, we do a review of financial statements, first by the finance management, and then it also comes to internal audit. We will also review. And there's been a checklist. I understand that from now going on, the units who must provide the information that goes into the financial statements are required to ensure that we do cover all those loopholes that ended up getting us such findings. We do that on a quarterly basis. It was the same with the next finding. We had the same issue where now the financial statements were, of course, adjusted before the audit could be concluded. And it's also the same with the secondary review that we have embarked on as a department. The number six, it was part of the ICE information system audit by the AG, where on review of some of our documentation relating to the bus system, there were some gaps that they had noted. And then also the fact that it was not approved, it was subsequently approved, and so this one has been taken care of. Going to number seven, fruitless and wasteful, incurred by advertising a position. We have taken a decision as management with effect from October that such practice of advertising before final approval by all the relevant stakeholders shall not be a practice. Previously, we would find that to be proactive, trying to make sure that when approval is in progress and you are confident that it is going to happen, to be proactive. There will be those instances where a position would be advertised and the recruitment process takes place, given the criticality of a position, so that when the final approval comes, the official must start. But we have seen the side effects of those type of processes, and we have decided that it's not going to be a practice going forward. And feedback that we received was that there were some issues relating to the documents that we needed to include the third item in our register, because that was one of the recommendations. But we have had commitment that they are finalizing it by end of February. We'll have that particular item in our fruitless and wasteful register, so that it can be addressed in terms of travel regulations. Number eight, it was also one of those findings that were unnecessary. I think in one of the provinces when the AGSA visited, there were standard leave registers that we also expect our provincial offices to be completing on a regular basis when officials take leave. There seem to have been some administrative glitches in the particular province where the register was found to be not in order. But the status now is that is, we are on top of that. We do not expect to have such a finding recurring. It was an administrative error that was encountered. Number nine, this was the first one we had from the AG. You know, when you are engaging with the AG, there are areas where you feel that you are foolproof up until another team comes. So we had a change of teams, and when this one came, we were a bit taken aback. But after explanations and the prescripts that were shown, we did concede that what they are recommending we will implement, because there are issues about how we're implementing quality assurance for our SMS performance agreements. That has been implemented, and it is being taken forth. Number 10, it was about where employees have been found to be underperforming. We did not really have sufficient evidence for the AGSA to show that there is a formal process that is being undertaken to make sure that we bring them to the desired performance. To formalize it in such a way that each and every manager, irrespective of where they are aware of what's expected, a formal system was introduced, because we had prescripts and circulars from the HR unit where as managers were expected to be complying and giving feedback. But we saw that it was not really working out as desired. So a formal system was introduced. It discussed at length in the last MENCO, where managers agreed on to what exactly is it that is going to be done. It's expected for uniformity, so that when the AGSA do come, instead of a manager saying that, no, we are really busy doing something, we should have tangible evidence. That one is now done. It's just the implementation now that is in progress. I think the second action plan I've already touched on with the circulars that were already there. Performance agreements not signed by 31st May. This was for an SMS, one SMS manager, which it was so isolated incident, because when we looked at the days in which the manager submitted and the time frame which will have been approved. There were some traveling issues between the two senior managers, but it was one of the findings that we had to accept because for that particular official we had not complied. But however, the formal performance management cycle system that I've alluded to is one of the issues that are going to be assisting in this regard. And if members can see this, the second action plan, I think that's what I referred to earlier. When I said it was 15, actually it's 16. The progress there is misplaced because after discussions, we did realize that there is actually no investigation that is going on as far as this particular finding. So the finding itself is implemented. This was misplaced. It referred to other cases that did not really have anything to do with this one. We apologize for that. The next one, 13 and 14 is about asset management. It was also in provinces where they could not locate assets which were transferred. This is taken care of now, and even through the quarterly asset registers, quarterly asset verifications that the national office goes around conducting, we are making sure that we have that under control so that we do not get such findings. There were also instances of assets that were lost, but because there were lost processes that were still being undertaken, we would still find them in an asset register, but they wouldn't be there physically. So the AG obviously had queries about that, but now those lost processes have been finalized, and we have subsequently removed the asset from the asset register. Number 14 was due to have been completed, but it's one of those issues that we have realized that it's still not approved. The policy has been updated, but it has not really been gone through the processes of inputting and approval. The managers concerned have requested that if they can be given up until the end of the financial year to make sure that it goes through all the structures that need to go through for approval. For ICT, as in the Information Communication and Technology, we only had one finding where it was regarding the Flowcentric, which is the system that we use for investigation. They had AJ had issues about us not having evidence for maintaining activities and access rights of users. That was taken care of at 31st, somewhere in December 2015, we appointed a program that was dedicated to Flowcentric, which was not the case before. Previously, we relied on the service provider to perform such. That is currently being taken care of. We also have provincial heads who are printing the report on a monthly basis just to check that the activities that are under their provinces, it's for officials that are under control in the activities that they are aware of. We also have our ICT governance committee, which is chaired by an external chairperson, where such reports as reviewed by the director ICT are also looked at and commented upon. The next one was on the performance indicator strategy. This was for the 15-16, our TID, the technical indicator description table, where AG, upon looking, there were inputs where they had felt that we had not well defined. So it was too late for 15-16, but it assisted us with the 16-17 APP, where we made sure that it's defined. Even for now, we have provided the AG with our 17-18 APP for inputting, and nothing of this nature came through. Now, the next findings is about investigation management, which most of the findings were relating to processes that are called on the practicality of it. It was deemed to be okay, but when now the AG comes and review based on performance and the type of information that is required for their usefulness to prove usefulness, your reliability and relevance, we had to make some amendments to our processes to make sure that we cater for those requirements. The first one, it was on recommendations not followed within 30 days. There could still be issues. You always get those one or two or three, given that we are spread through provinces that are not, where there would be reasons. But obviously, with the AGSA, if we have a standard and we have not met method. The reasons might be there, but it's usually a case of you can always do more to make sure that you keep these reasons. So there is frequent monitoring that is happening, that we do submit on time. It's a weekly thing that now the provincial has been tasked to be making sure that it's been done. The number 18, and I think, number 18 was administrative, where some things that are supposed to be done were not signed. There's not really a proper action plan that you would say, this is what we're going to do. But once more, it's just sensitizing the provincial heads that it should be one of those quality checks, which should have been done in the first place. It was one of the first findings that we had encountered, the administrative ones, as far as investigation. 19, misclassification of cases between different indicators. This has to do with the definitions of the different indicators, as well as what contain our SOPs. If members, honourable members, can see, we had done an extensive editing of our SOP. Still in progress. The last I saw, it was issued now to provincial heads for input. We are envisaging that by 1st of April, we should be kicking in the USOP, which will address most of the findings that were related to investigations. However, maybe for members must know that this means that there could be possibilities that when we are sitting here next year talking about 67 findings, you would still get this type of findings because the SOP that is still currently in effect is the old one. Number 20, completed investigations reported an incorrect period. These were linked to cases that were done before the new system, I think they called it GoPro, with the migration where issues where you have cases that were not reported manually. And then when we finally realized that we've worked on this, it was never reported, whether you check what was on GoPro, whether you check what was reported as far as our manual record is concerned, and then it had to be reported. So the AG picked up on that with extensive discussions. And then there's an exercise that, because they work on samples, there was an exercise that management had committed to be doing to make sure that come end of the financial year, such cases have been dealt with. It's one of the action plans that are still not yet true, still in progress. The 21 is still the same administrative issue where case files are not signed, and then we have, as management, advice that director investigation that has to ensure that this is done. The next one, incorrect classification of case, is also being addressed by the SOP, the change in definitions that are going to be effected. Same with number 23, the decision ready case is completed in contravention of standard operating procedure, the special closure, where on the practical side of it, case will be completed, but because we had a specific definition on our APP, AG was only ready to accept something that is has been documented. So we had to make sure that we update our SOP so that it cover all sorts of closures that we have as a department, not only something that goes to NPA or those stakeholders that are going to take the case for us, because it does happen that a case can be concluded but not necessarily go out for the prosecution part of it. Number 24, duplication of complicated cases. It was also the special closure is being addressed by the SOP that's being edited. No proper internal control. Number 25, still also addressing it with the SOP. Here AG was not satisfied about the evidence that we give them as far as for them to account as the source of activities as to how many. We might have 1,000 cases registered in the system, but they wanted a source of evidence that shows them how many were actually reported. Do not show us what's in the system. Show us something that happened before so that we can be confident that what's in the system is actually what the public came through and reported to you. The forms that are going to be introduced and also the registers, the definition of the registers that are going to be updated, is also part of the thing that with effect from 1st April we will be going through. Number 26,
It was related to the APP, where the calculations were not adding up as far as what was provided. It was also linked to the definitions that we had on the SOP, which the AG used as the basis. We are updating that. We've taken note of that when we are updating the SOP as well. And it will be implemented with effect from 1st April. The last two ones were in our program 4 unit, where AG had noted that there are recommendations that were not in our master register. We have taken a standard management that there should be now a monthly review of the register to confirm that it's completed, and then there should be certificates. The issue of certificates came when colleagues would say that, but we do perform a review. So to make sure that we cannot be performing a review, but the AG still comes and raises the finding, officials now must certify that it has been done, so that we can make sure that whatever completeness issue, it's a pity to be understating. It will be better if AG had said we overstated than minus, because it means that out of our performance, there are some issues that might not be reported, which is efforts lost. The last one was on media statements, where duplicate responses, duplicate in a sense that for one issue you will have a different intervals responses based on the inquiries that came. So the AG advised us that there should be critical responses that we might want to consider as something to report upon, because an inquiry can come at any time, and if we were to take into consideration everything that comes, we might find ourselves over-reporting. So now we have a register where we track inquiries and responses for each and every media inquiry, and then through a thought process, the ones that are deemed to be not of relevance for reporting, we do remove them, so that we don't find ourselves in the same situation where we had to remove issues from performance. And that concludes the AGSA findings progress report. We'll hear from honorable members if there's more.
No, thanks for that. I think maybe in terms of time that we take the summary of the IPES performance as read, and maybe if there's any conclusions or any outstanding issues, let's deal with that quickly, and then we'll go to questions.
Thanks, Chair. I will take the honourable members through the summary of our performance. The Executive Director has provided context within which our performance happened. I would like to particularly highlight the issue of the budget cuts, as well as the...
No, Mr. Nanjuga, I said we take this as read. It was made available to the members. We got just a time problem today. The house is starting at 2. So let's go to the questions immediately and comments and deal with the necessary issues. Let's start with Honourable Kruger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, some remarks is that I'm quite worried about the fact that we actually heard this morning that IPED cannot do its work because of budget constraints. So from that, my question will be, of what amount do we speak here and talk about if we want to say that we need another so much to ensure that we can fulfill our work as far as that is concerned? And especially, Chairperson, in the light of the latest release of the survey where the public's trust in the police declined to about 58%, because this is the only tool the public has against the police to ensure that they comply to the same rules as they are supposed to comply to. Now, Chairperson, my question, I've got about 3-4 questions, but I will be frank with them. We see that IPED is quite in the media these days. Now, firstly, my question to the director is that I want to know, why was a civilian...
Honourable, remember we're going to come to the IPRA processes after this
say again, we're going to come to high profile cases, the briefing on that, the
yeah.
you're going to refer to now in just 10 or 15 minutes. So, okay. But you're welcome to raise it now, but you know.
Okay,
yeah.
Can I raise it then there?
Yeah.
Okay, then I tend to raise it there. My question then further, Chairperson, is on point 12, on the information of request from the Fire Act. I just want to have clarity on that, because, you know, we get a lot of legal costs because we do not comply and give the information when requested. My question is there, are we first wait till there is an application in terms of the Fire Act and then provide the information, or if the media or any other institution asks the information, do we give them that information or do we wait until they go into the court? So that is quite important. The other thing is, Chairperson, it refers to that IPET is actually more, can I say, dependent on the tools and equipment from the police. And in the report it says that they will never be able, because of the budget, to have its own. Can I just have an indication what tools and systems we're talking about? I'll comply to that. I know your time constraints.
Thank you very much. No, you'll get a second round soon. Honourable Ramadakani, thank you.
No, also briefly, Chair, and thanks for the presentation, EV and the staff. I know the time is not on our side, and I can see your impatience. So I'm going to, I can read it from distance. I just want to find out, in a summarized way, the Falun Commission work and what is expected for the IPED to deliver. Earlier on in the presentation, there was an issue about the budget. You also repeated that issue. What I don't find is, here is our plan. What we are now knocking on doors is to say, fund our plan in order for us to implement completely the Falun Commission's report. So what is your report, what is your plan that you could say that maybe not even now, that you have costed this is the plan for you to be able to take you to this point. And when we speak as a committee and we seek for supporting you, we're supporting a plan, but not simply a statement of promise, but this is a solution. I didn't get that coming through. Maybe it would be useful if you could do that. Because the problem that if we're not taken on board, we only hear the problems. The reality is that there's been a Falun Commission of Inquiry. There is matters that you must do. It's not a matter of choice. The IPED has to do it. Otherwise, money has to be found to do all what has to be done to complete that work, including the issue about the reconstruction of C2. So that has to happen. So what I'm more eager to find is that comprehensive, that this is what we need. That can also include this reliance, independence of IPED, versus the reliance on the police and the police information and capacity to do certain things. So what I'm trying to make a suggestion, Chair, is that perhaps it would be useful for you and the committee to hear from you or to present to us this plan for arriving at that. It may cost, you may say it's 1 million, you may say it's 10 million that you want. That is what I think we should be engaging around in terms of making sure that we deliver. I have a number of other questions, but I'm not going to deal with that because there are slightly detailed questions about the presentation. But I believe this is the major one that I I'm not hearing coming through quite strongly in terms of what is that plan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mkhlungu.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I must say, first of all, I'm quite worried about the very first explanation on the question of the Marikana massacre, which seems to be quite stalling. And I'm really worried because this thing to me needs simple political will, power to get this thing off the ground. Now, and I will have a serious problem, Chairperson, as I raised my concern even with civilian secretariat. Organs that are supposed to be empowering our people, particularly our people who have been victims of apartheid repression, seems not to be actually then seems not to be able to stand on both feet, both the IP and the civilian secretariat, in terms of ensuring that their authority is felt over police services of our country. And I wonder even only if we can allow this to go on like this, because seemingly, I understand the change of command in terms of IP. Seemingly, as members of this committee, Chairperson, we have been misled all along by the previous administration of IP. Because if you find these AG's findings, it tells you that there has never been an organization, honestly speaking, approval or appointment of people on non-approved positions and all that. And it means even with us here as the committee, before the AG's findings, something is seriously wrong in terms of governance. And our responsibility of oversight, application of oversight as a committee, what is it? Now, I'm shocked. I must be very, very honest, because there seems to be simple things that are organizational mainstream here. How do you get appointment of position of people on positions that are not... IPED is a very small organization. Do we have an organization called IPED? Did we ever have it? Even only if things are going to be detected by the AG, passing through, that we have been meeting all along with the heads of the department, briefing us of whatever good things that have been... Now, really, I am very much concerned, Chairperson, really. Our country will bend right in our own hands if and only if we can operate like this. That is my concern, Chairperson. I must be very, very honest. And that's why then I raised this question, even with CSP, to say, if and only if then the Act is saying something else, and why do they say that CSP, they are going to fund the CPFs? Same thing, you are coming across same thing here. And now, that is just my concern, that as a public representative, where do I stand? Can I actually say that we are, as members elected by the people, we really represent the people fairly and fully? Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentation from the IFA team. Just one comment and two quick questions. My comment is that I also share the concern from the chairperson and other members about the general picture of underfunding for the IPED. And I mean, it's now got multiple dimensions, if I can put it that way. As the director said, there's the historical background of the fact that the funding never matched the post-establishment. If I recall correctly, the post-establishment was just over 300, somewhere thereabouts, but the actual 500, sorry, but the funding allocation was somewhere just over 300 then, something like that. So there's always been this structural shortfall of a mismatch between funding and what has been calculated and estimated to be the capacity required. Then we've now got the extra layer of the Follow-up Commission investigation, where we now have the 3 million shortfall. There's also still the issue of needing to implement the expansion strategy that's also been hanging for a while. And now we know since, I think, the last financial year, there's the issue of the boosting the capacity of the NS... Sorry? Yes, INSET, thank you, the specialized investigation units. So it just keeps piling on, and we're not getting to a point where it's addressed at the core. And I would like to make the appeal to the rest of the committee that with the new budget cycle coming up, we have an opportunity to address, as the committee feeding into Parliament as the appropriation body, and it's especially it's especially acute given what we just heard from the secretariat in the last session about their projected underspending. So we've got money, you know, swishing around in the secretariat that they're struggling to spend. Then we've got ICID decide not finding or having the money that they need. And Chair, I think that the committee and Parliament has a role to play in mediating between those two situations to arrive at some kind of equilibrium. So I think we need to be proactive in that regard. My two questions, Chair. The first is just a very quick one. It's not quite on topic with the presentation, but it's a relevant issue that I've had floating around in my mind. There were media reports that the former acting director, Mr. Khamanyane, transferred from the IPID to the DPCI. I just wanted to get some clarity from the director from a legal perspective, whether in light of IPID's structural independence, so financial, operational, and so on, is that transfer not something that requires some sort of sign-off or approval from the director himself, given that it's a human resource that is being taken out of the IPID and therefore could potentially impact on the performance of the departments? I know there's the larger framework around the public service and administration regulations and those frameworks, so I'm happy to be duly informed as to what applies. But there was a question that just came to mind for me that having had the constitutional confirmation of the IPID independence, that kind of transfer and those kind of things happening affecting the IPID, what is supposed to apply to make sure that it's compliant? And then the second question, just from a comment that the director made in terms of the consultative forum, I mean, I share the director's dislike of meetings for the sake of meetings, but there is a statutory obligation for the forum to meet at least four times a year. And so that does need to be complied with. And he mentioned that IPED prefers that there be a substantive agenda on the table before a meeting is set up and agreed to. And I wanted to just ask, firstly, what are the substantive issues that they would like to put on the table from IPED side? So are they proactively working to make that happen and to realize that? So we don't have a reporting meeting 6 months down the line, and then the forum is behind the timeline to meet the target for four times a year. Because, for example, I mean, one issue of common interest, I think, between the IPID and the secretariats is the issue of how to receive, deal with, and process public complaints relating to the police service. Because I do note in the conclusion page of the presentation, it never came up on the screen, but it's mentioned in the first point that the budget constraints mean that there have been four case classifications prioritized for investigation, which are obviously all serious ones because they relate to death in custody, loss of police action and rape and corruption. But we can never forget the issue that I think the biggest concern, because it's the largest volume and the most widespread, is the issue of assaults by police officers. So I would hate to see that being undercut or undermined because of the funding situation and the fact that we haven't got this complaints infrastructure, if you will, in place. So just, I think the forum is a good space for that to be addressed jointly, collaboratively between the IPED and the Secretariat. And I'd just like some clarity as to how that's going to be driven forward so we don't lose that opportunity. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I would like to agree with the Executive Director that surely it's not their duty to educate police, not to rape. I mean, they can't dip into their into their funds to do that. The police are supposed to know that. And I think they are taught even as training that you mustn't kill, you mustn't rape, you mustn't abuse. So I don't see the reason why they should be taught that. Especially if they do that in police cells. It's even a worse crime than if it was outside. So I would like to agree that they are not going to spend their funding on doing that. The duty of the police themselves to teach their own. In terms of funding for the Falun Commission, it's rather a bit arrogant to tell a person that, okay, this is what you are supposed to do. Go look for your own money to do that. And this is a national, it's a high, high flow sort of issue. And you simply say, no, we don't have money, so it doesn't make sense. I think the committee must intervene. How do you simply say that? If you don't have funds to go and reconstruct a crime scene, it means you can't move. There's no movement in terms of what you are supposed to be doing. I would just request that the committee intervene on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anything from you? Just a couple from my side as well. The same questions I've asked for CEDA, Civil and Secretary, people asking for the police. Just to get an indication from the Executive Director, whether he and his senior management, let's say director level and up, if your declarations of interest have been submitted, and whether there's a policy to include all sponsorships as well as any extramural remuneration. Is that in place? Is there a policy? And we can have copies of all those documents in the next 2 weeks. Then just the issue of funding. I think members will remember in 2015 we also adopted the BRRR recommendation that Treasury should fund the $5 million that they need for the Forum Commission to be completed. In terms of the larger funding issue, I just want to get the sense from the Executive Director. I think next week it will be a very tight budget for all departments. And usually Treasury's response will be, if you want more money from your baseline, you must, of course, you must cut on expenses, cut on core issues. And I think with this agreement, non-core issues, you must cut that. You know, that there's no other way. But within the cluster itself, we've heard about the underspending at CSP. We know the budget of other departments within the cluster. Is that not an alternative also to look at? And maybe if the Executive Director can just maybe expand on that, what efforts or steps can be undertaken to maybe to go to other departments and say, well, if we only need $6 million to ensure that we deal with the expansion strategy, maybe in the first year, and also look at ensuring that we deal with the Forum Commission, shouldn't that be looked at? Right, members, that's the questions. Let's go to the Executive Director and his team.
Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I would just, on occasion, defer to one of my colleagues to deal with some of the issues. I think I'll start with Honourable Ramatlakana's inputs about having a program or a plan which is then costed and funded. Honourable members would remember that we submitted the expansion plan and which to the committee, and the expansion plan was approved. Basically, it should appear minimal, a modest expansion of IPED that is right at the bone. And once it is approved, there's no money forthcoming. In fact, the opposite. The expansion plan approximated the envisaged institutional structure composition of IPED. I think the total amount was 400 and something, and the amount from inception was 535. So we're still 100 off, even on the expansion strategy, from what was agreed upon. But I'll ask Mr. Sissoko to deal with that in further detail, because he's an institutional memory of the department, because he's been there since the days of ICD. But the point, Honourable Ramatlakana, is that we cannot be having ideal plans in place for our total needs, where basic, simple ones of modest expansion strategy cannot be funded. So you have many ways to deal with underfunding. Some of them you deal with systems to improve your operations, or you prioritize operations, the ones that you can do, like we have done since October, where we've pulled as many investigators as possible in to deal with investigations that will make impact, like the ones which I will come to later, Honourable Cronwald, appear in the media. They appear in the media precisely because they make an impact. But I think to be realistic, it would be unfair of us to spend time dealing with the comprehensive ideal setup and costing it when there isn't a snowball in hell's chance of getting any money. We would like, on the issue of underfunding, for the committee to assist us. I've made requests, and continuous requests have been made, for us to meet with the minister, the department. A treasury's position is the ministry has approved these budgets of the different entities that fit under the ministry. So we would like some assistance in that regard, and we'll appreciate that, so that we could meet and deal with. But issues would be, the father mentions, is ballistic issues and other forensic issues. We also require dedicated analysts to deal with financial records when we're doing lifestyle audits and when we're analyzing corrupt transactions. Just on the issue of the PAHIA Act, I mean, our approach to the public is one of transparency. That is our approach. Unless there's very sensitive investigative information at our disposal, we prefer that there is interaction and to provide it. But honourable members will remember that one of the issues for which I was suspended was providing information to people who were wrongly charged in the so-called rendition issue. So there was a PAHIA application made to us, but the simple issue was I was suspended as one of the reasons because I told the people that we have not recommended prosecution and discipline for them. So on the PAHIA Act, if we are protected enough to be as transparent as possible with members of the public or affected people without compromising investigations, we should be encouraged to do it, you know, not wrapped over the knuckles about that. So our approach generally is transparency. Okay, on the transfer of former acting executive director Kamanyani, we did not approve of the transfer for two reasons. One, there was a disciplinary which he was facing for fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and also there was a criminal case which he's still facing. But at a certain stage on 1st of December, we started receiving letters from him as an already appointed member of TPCI requesting his bonus, 100,000 rand bonus, which the minister approved for him. In requesting a handover report from him, he had indicated he's not going to give a handover report to explain some of the things, honourable member, you were raising, because all his activities had the blessings of the minister. In that circumstances, his fait accompli is the minister facilitated the appointment of Kamanyani to DPCI. Now it raises another question for us, is whether the appointment to DPCI should not be seen as gratification in a relationship which is suspiciously a corrupt relationship. That you do certain things, I give you my blessing, and then if things go wrong, if the suspended executive director comes back, well, you have a place at DPCI. That's the kind of environment, Honorable Mbele. On the issues of the sponsorships, I'll just ask internal audit to speak on the policy.
Sorry, Honorable Mbele, follow up on that same issue, you're welcome. Thanks, Chair. I'm sorry to interrupt the director. Just a very quick follow-up. So with that expansion on, or the expanded response, can I just ask, has there been any kind of statutory or policy or regulation violation in the course of that transfer and the approval by the minister?
Well, my understanding from the Constitutional Court judgment would be that there needs to be sufficient distance between the minister and DPCI, like with IPED, that they should be independent. So for me, there would be a transgression of the independence if the minister is able to offer jobs with his blessing to people in GPCR. I think it creates a very bad, dangerous precedent in terms of governance and oversight of organizations like ours and anti-corruption organizations like GPCR. In other words, if you do my bidding, I will reward you. You cannot have that, Honorable Member.
Was the short one, because we really, I want to have my members for the second round as well, and the other presentation we're running towards one.
No, it's, I think, Jefferson, I just wanted to actually then say, because if I had the executive director saying there has been a pending investigation on the person who was then touted to DPCI, such a very critical organ. And we have got this thing, that song that we are always told of, vetting. Whether then that vetting could not, Jefferson, actually then reflect this red flag hanging over a person at a strategic level, so that we can then begin to understand. Because this setting apart of state organs against one another, I think as this committee chairperson, we will definitely need to boil down
and maybe have time to actually run a deeper cracking investigation, even no matter to whatever level, and as much wrong.
Very short, Chairperson. Now, I just want to know, is a criminal case still continuing against the person, and who is doing that investigation?
Let's deal with that response and also the other responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. The criminal investigation was initially opened with the police because the concerned person, the Komanyan, was still part of IPED, so he was a civilian. He was not part of the mandate of IPED. And then once the transfer happened, then we took over the investigation as IPED, and we even established that no investigation was done at all in those allegations. So the investigation is currently at an advanced stage. It will be shortly be forwarded to the NPA for decision.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I would just defer to any of my colleagues if they want to add anything. But I'll just speak on the policy on sponsorships, extramural activities or benefits or declarations of interest. Our view is that because we exercise oversight over the police, the levels at which we're judged on in terms of conduct should be higher than that of the police. So the more independent we are, the higher our accountability and also the levels of integrity. Senior managers have been warned about it, but what is amiss is a clear policy covering all the aspects that you raised. And I'll just ask Ms. Shawli if she could add anything on that.
Okay, the first final of the AGSA, the policy that we said is still in progress. It covers also the issues that have been raised, because like we said, we have realized that there are things that need to be really articulated in such a way that we do not get to miss an opportunity of accountability. But as far as the completion of conflict of interest, we do that via the DPSA processes. It was done for the last year. My recollection is that I had not really seen some activities, because we have a corporate governance office who deals directly with DPSA, and we follow the lead.
Chairperson and honourable members, on the questions of Honourable Groenewald, the tools that we need. Members should understand that as IPED, for instance, we do not have forensic and ballistic capabilities. So we have to rely on the police for that part of our work. And that can also compromise our independence. But when you look at it, it's a very expensive exercise to develop that capacity for IPED. We truthfully have not even costed it, because our immediate priority was the expansion strategy which was presented to this committee, so that we capacitated the department to an extent that we can be able to fully implement our mandate as per the IPED Act. So that has been our priority so far. When you look at our submissions to Treasury, since from the time when we became IPED, we have continuously raised the issue of our capacity, which over 10 years back when we were ICD, we were supposed to be 535, and we were still not at that number. In terms of the expansion strategy that we've developed, we had envisaged on a phased-in period that we would have the investigative capacity, only investigative capacity, of at least 516 investigators spread throughout the country, which would then be located in all regions, districts within the country. Because part of our challenge now is our response time to, for instance, crime scene, because of the distances that we have to travel. So these are the issues that we reflect in our expansion strategy, but also the levels of where our investigators are. Because currently we have to contend with Section 23 of our Act, which says our investigators must be paid at par with those of the police. Currently is not the position. We're grappling currently with the labor unions on this specific issue. So part of the expansion strategy was we must peg, therefore, the levels of our investigators to be compliant with that section. So that has been the priority, Honorable Members. With regard to the Falun Commission,
maybe in terms of Parliament, maybe you're coming on the 15th of March, the department, to deal with, you know, with Parliament in detail. So maybe just a short, concise, I think the challenge is the let's say, the state of the investigations, we're going to get fully that on the 15th. So maybe just, you know, the gist of the question.
I think, thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think the bottom line on Parliament is that we did not get the funding. And as a result of that, we had to use our own baseline budget to do the investigations that we have done up to now on Pharma. That has also resulted in the accruals that the executive director was talking about, because we then redirected some of the budget that was supposed to do your normal Section 28 investigation into Pharma without getting the requisite funding, despite the recommendation by Falun that we should get to that.
Right. Any other responses before we go to the second presentation?
Maybe, Chairperson, quickly let me address on the issue of the assault by Honorable Mbele. We've indicated that we've prioritized our investigation in terms of looking at all the priority investigations that we have to do. However, our instruction to the provinces was very clear that we must find innovative ways to still continue doing the other work that we have to do whilst keeping on expenditure. As an example, for instance, please, when there is a complaint of assault, a person will lay a complaint with the police, normally, we would our investigators, during the course of the investigation, they'll have to go to the police station, get the docket, and start the investigation. So some of the arrangements we did is that provinces make arrangements with the police that where there are those kind of cases, rather than them traveling, which is cost, then the police bring the dockets to IPID, and then we then start investigating from there. So these are some of the innovative ways we try to say, can we assist each other in terms of containing costs, but still try to do that work? But in reality, the priority is all on those matters.
Honorable Likane, is there a short follow-up?
Very, very brief. And the answer will also be brief. Do you receive a good cooperation with the police in your investigation?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Briefly, it's not clear-cut, and we can't really generalize. It changes from case to case. In some instances, there's been specific and deliberate hampering of investigations. On other cases, we receive good cooperation.
Right, thank you, Honorable Members. I think let's go to the second presentation. If there's anything still outstanding, but I mean, we will from the Secretariat monitor the documents that still needed to be given to us and also additional information. So we'll correspond with the department in that regard. Let's go to the high profile cases. Executive Director, thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I'll touch on some of the cases. I just handled the first one. and then hand over to Mr. Sesoko to deal in detail with high-profile cases and their outcomes. Okay. Honorable Chairperson, I just speak verbally. We will not put anything on the screen. I just go through it. Where we need detailed questions and answers, we will provide them as per your requests. But the first case is the case of, and I'll go through it just briefly in an overview, details I will provide. We have several statements, documentary proof, including bank statements, of which, and unrefuted events that indicate corruption, money laundering, fraud, defeating the ends of justice as it relates to the Acting National Commissioner of Police and some of service providers, to SAPS. We've also found there has been a pattern of whistleblowers, witnesses, including police officers and IPED investigators, being harassed, threatened, or victimized. That's basically the overall issue. Details and specific figures I have and I can provide on request. The case is ongoing, it's at an advanced stage, and I'll hand it over to Mr. Sesoko to deal with some of the other matters.
Thank you, Executive Director. Mr. Sesoko.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the high-profile matter is related to the Ndoni matter, where we received a complaint also on that matter. It revolves around payment made by SAPS to Ndoni, whether those payments were made in a corrupt manner by SAPS to Ndoni. The investigation is still at its initial stages. We have requested documentation, so the investigation in this regard is still continuing. We also have a high-profile matter where Brigadier Kaba and other members of the DPCI are involved, relating to the allegations of kidnapping, assault, intimidation, and criminal injuria. And the victim here is Mr. Simington of SARS, an employee at SARS. This matter has, the investigation is at a very advanced stage. We've received recently a few directives from the DPP on the matter, and the directives are being attended to. This also would be referred back to the DPP shortly. There is also an allegation of torture that we are investigating. In fact, it's death in custody, where a person was killed, and it is alleged that he was killed during torture. This is a long-standing investigation. The IPED investigated it in 2013. However, there was no breakthrough in the investigation at the time. And recently, there's been information that came through, which is yielding positive results. The new evidence suggests that there is substance to the allegations of torture and the killing of the individual concerned. So the investigation is also at advanced stage. So we should be also referring the matter to the back to the DPP shortly. We also investigated matters of alleged fraud, criminal injuria, plagiary, and defeating the ends of justice against General Nklemeza. When statements were obtained in these investigations, and these matters are now sitting with the Director of Public Prosecutions, and we're waiting decision on these matters. We've already spoken about the allegations of fraud and corruption and contravention of the PFMA against General Khamanyane. And this matter is also at an advanced stage, as I've indicated, that we'll be sending the docket shortly to the DPP for decision. We also investigating a case of, it came to us as a case of death, where two police officers were killed, and when the allegations came to us was that one officer killed the other officer, and there was involvement of drugs there. So what was reported to us was that the member of the DPCI was called because this member of the SAPS was in possession of drugs, and therefore he was accosting that member for those drugs. And during that process, this member of the SAPS shot and killed the member of the DPCI, Mashego, and then thereafter shot himself. Unfortunately, what happened was we were called very late to the crime scene. After several hours after the crime scene, and all members, senior members of the DPCI and SAPS were already at the crime scene. Now, we have since started the investigation. What our investigation is picking up, though, is that there is a problem of drugs at OR Tambo International involving members of the SAPS and members of the DPCI. It would appear that there is a sort of a war to who will get to the drugs first. What is appealing about the situation is that those drug mules who bring the drugs into the country, they are never arrested. Only the drugs are taken. And once the drugs are taken, there is an issue of the value of the drugs that is actually accounted for. So some of the drugs are not even weighed at the airport as it should be, and there is an issue with regard to what was actually in the bags when they were initially received and what was subsequently tendered to the SAP-13 as the drugs. It's a serious concern for us. We recently went to view footages at OWAR, which, for lack of a better word, is very appealing to see what members of SAPS and DPCI get up to when dealing with the issues of drugs. Drugs, for instance, would come from the international arrival, but they will be moved by these members with the assistance of some of the contractors within the airport, moved out to the domestic, and they come out as if they come from domestic, and they never go through proper processes at the airport. So these are concerning to us. We've engaged with AXA on this issue, and this is an ongoing investigation. And we're getting information from sources about some of the things that are going on there. And we hope to crack the case in the near future. We can't say, unfortunately, how long this investigation will take us. But this came out as a result of the death of these two officers. Now, it is important also to note that even though it's alleged that the other officer, police officer, killed the DPCI member and killed himself, what we find odd is that the officer shot himself twice. So he shot himself below the chin, out here, and then he shot himself on the side of the head, which we find very odd. How is it possible that a person committing suicide would shoot himself twice like that? So these are part of the investigations that we're doing. And hopefully we'll be able to crack this investigation. I think these are the high-profile matters. I think there is another one, Chairperson, in Sunnyside. It's a systemic corruption matter also. It's one of those that we said we are aware of. It also related to drugs, where members of the SAPS would target foreign nationals and then demand cash from them. And if they don't get their way with cash from them, they take them to their residence. And when they get drugs at their residence, they take those drugs, and then those drugs do not end up at the SAP 13. They go back to the streets. So that's one of the systemic matter we're investigating. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you very much. Is that the report? Executive Director, is that the report? Let's go to questions. You were the first round, so you were the first one.
Quick and short, Jefferson. I think we should support IPED doing the job. Sounds like shaking the hornet's nest. But there's one thing I want clarity on, Jefferson. On the investigation of the acting national commissioner, a private person went with IPED investigators. Now, I want to know whether it is true. And if so, why? That's the first question. My second question is, in the case of the acting national commissioner and General Nkulumiza, I hear that the investigations is in a final stage. When can we have a closure on the investigation? Because, Chairperson, these sort of investigations is not good for South Africa. That's the two questions. Thank you.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. Surely some of the information is quite shocking, to say the least. But it reminds me about what was happening in Bogota, in Colombia, about the drugs and syndicates operation. But I'm not going to go there. Just the question is going to be this one. And maybe following on Honorable Kuhnewald. Surely your investigators that investigate these matters are properly vetted. Some of them come from the police, so they know what they has to be done. What does is there's something that keep coming in the media. Now that we have you here, maybe you should just explain this to us as well. There seems to be an allegation that comes up continuously, which suggests that IPED sees some of their investigation to be investigated by other private investigators. And coming to the fore always is the name of Paul O'Sullivan. And sometimes he posed as an iPad employee, or and be mandated. Now, just want to get some clarity on this, because I think what is a collaboration, I don't know what the media keep giving lots of names. Is there truth in this? That's a simple question. Is there truth in this that some of the your work you see to Paul O'Sullivan? Maybe there are others. Maybe this one is just a profile, but maybe just also tell us if there's any other where there is this kind of collaboration, so that we know, and if it does, it is so, what is authority? What is the authority that you rely on to do that kind of collaboration and investigations? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Markey. Are you covered? Yes. Honourable Shlomo, you're welcome.
No, thanks, Chairperson. No, thanks, you know, Chairperson, at times it becomes very difficult for me because the executive director, it would be very, very naive of me to doubt some of the things that he has raised, because my relationship with him is not just a friend of friendship, but that one of struggle. He knows when he was sentenced to life, facing death, fighting for freedom, that our people today are rejoicing. Even his father, Derek, there in Wentworth, I know, his wife, Paula, and all that. Now, these things to me, Chairperson, I think going back, I'll ask this difficult question to say, you, Executive Director, as I've said, I was just trying to explain to some people who might not even know where you come from with this freedom that we have today, knowing that you are not the first one. Police officer Drummond, I don't know what was his rank. And there seemed to have been a brush wiping all of you down the stream. And citizens of this country, everyone has got a right to be appointed to these things. But those people maybe not having had that experience that you and Drummond had of being combatants against the system, would you say that maybe you are getting, as a head of IPED, sufficient political backup in your work? Or you end up, who ends up then resorting to anything else for assistance because you are like a person running for cover? Is that a situation that I will get? I'm just picking that question, Chairperson, moving informed by, for example, this question of a touted ex-director of IPED being appointed at a political level to a strategic organ of Hawks. With you, are you getting that political support? Or else then you find yourself actually then moving from cover to say, I must get this thing done. That is all that I wanted to say. But the reason why I was raising that, because I know you, Comrade McBride, that really all of us were concerned when you were about to hang for freedoms that many of us actually paid very, very dearly for. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's just two questions on my side. The first comment is an observation that when Acting Commissioner Pahlane came before the committee 2 weeks ago to brief on the issue of the CPN reports, he was accompanied by the police minister, from the sentiments conveyed by the minister, it was evident that it was a show of support and solidarity. So it's quite telling that there's the contrast of the minister not being at this particular meeting to, I suppose, grace the committee with his presence in a similar way, and to show that he takes these kind of high-profile matters seriously and deals with them even-handedly, which then brings me to the point that the ED hinted at earlier, which is that it's quite clear that relations between the ED and the minister are frosty, to put it mildly. And so the first question is what the ED did mention that there have been requests made to the minister to assist with certain things. Is it still the case that, as I would put it, the minister seems to be waging a bit of a cold war on the IPED and not being cooperative and facilitative in helping the IPED execute its mandate? Because that's a very serious concern and a very big issue in terms of the seeming partisanship of the minister when it comes to issues in his portfolio and managing those relationships. Concerning the investigation into the acting commissioner, the acting commissioner was very emphatic in his claims of innocence in terms of the allegations, and the issue I'd raised with him was that the problem was the forensic report that he cited did not establish his innocence. It did not arrive at conclusive findings refuted the allegations he faced, and that's why there were questions still outstanding that the IPED had to investigate. And in particular, the compelling factor was the issue of the fact that IPED was able to obtain a search warrant, which from my legal knowledge suggests that there must have been compelling prima facie evidence presented to the magistrates or the judge who granted that search warrant. And so that is the big elephant in the room, if you will, is that we need clarity and we need finality on these issues, given that there's that link of the crime tech supplier provider from the previous allegations and the issue of the stereo in Pasani's home. Che, and then my second point is around the issue of the arrests of Paul O'Sullivan and his assistant Ms. Trent that we saw reported in the media. My colleagues have already asked for an explanation as to what the nature of Mr. O'Sullivan's involvement or cooperation or collaboration with the IPED is. So my question will springboard from whatever that response is, which is, given his role and partnership of sorts, it seems, with the IPED in the investigation, would his arrest, which was firstly in contempt of a court order, but would his arrest not constitute interference in an IPED investigation, which in itself is already a separate offence that then gets piled on? And what follow-up action would the IPED be taking to address that issue as well? I realise that Section 33 of the IPED Act only specifies interference in the duties of a director or a member of the IPED, which Mr. O'Sullivan technically is not. But it does impact adversely, it could be argued, on the integrity and the effectiveness of the investigation. So what's the specific understanding and the follow-up to be about the illegal arrest of Mr. O'Sullivan in terms of the investigation into the acting commissioner? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, members. Yes, I think in terms of the
report, the oral report we received from IPED. Of course, it's a huge concern for us, the facts that's made available, and I think it would be good if we maybe can get a written submission on these issues, because it involves the acting national commissioner. And from the, and I mean, we've heard yesterday the report from the Statistician General in terms of trust from the community, in a certain sense, is going down with regard to the police. And it's important that we ensure that the NDP recommendations is implemented so that we can have trust in the police restored. Now, if the acting head of the police is embroiled in controversy and there's allegations, of course, that's an issue that we as a committee must look at seriously, but we'll have to have a written report from IPED, and of course there is a process in the courts that must still play out. I just want to maybe get an indication from the executive director on two issues, whether he's sent an information note on the issues with regard to the acting national commissioner, to the appointing authority in terms of the acting national commissioner, that is the President of the Republic. Did he do it? And if, when, did he also, supply the Minister of Police with info note on the issue, that we could just get that assurance? Secondly, I think some of the members raised it, we'll have to get assurance also from IPED, because it's quite critical. You're an independent institution, was confirmed by the courts. In terms of your standing operating procedures, your regulations, that you act alone, because I think the issue of possible involvement of other parties or third parties or consultants may affect, whether you like it or not, from a perception point of view, investigations. So, Executive Director, we want real clarity on that issue. If you can give us assurances that all high-profile cases and other cases is dealt with, purely in terms of the law, that's quite critical going forward. And then I think the Portfolio Committee during this last 2-3 years, we raised constantly the issue of systemic corruption. It's important focus for the committee. So we welcome the approach that it gets the necessary attention. It was mentioned in the slides that there's two cases. I just want to get an indication of the 9 provinces. Is there other cases also that is in the radar in terms of projects? I know the National Investigative Team not being funded is a anchor, but just to get a sense of, are you actively also dealing with other issues? We've seen other stations that there's been a lot of allegations, and there has been arrests from DPCI side and from SAPS itself, but I just want to get a sense from your strategic planning at station level as well. What are you doing to ensure if there's corrupt station commanders, if they are on the payroll of criminals, what are you doing to address it? Right, let's take those questions.
Thanks. Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I think from the beginning, I think I must assume that the Honourable Minister would have loved to have been here to give support to IPED and his Executive Director. I'm sure he's held up with something else. We have not yet sent the info note on the situation of the acting national commissioner. I think I'd stop just there for the moment on that issue. It is difficult to envisage that the minister will take our recommendations seriously. In fact, at the moment, how things are is that when we send our monthly recommendations, they get sent back to us from the minister. One has also to understand that since the investigation became public, acting national commissioner has received a bravery award. Acting National Commissioner has received awards together with the minister from churches. The minister was here with the Acting National Commissioner 2 weeks ago. And our normal recommendations are returned. It gives you a context of what is possible and what is not possible. But we will continue to do the right thing. We are continuing to try to see the minister, to brief the minister on a range of issues and to raise a range of issues with him. But I think I must deal with the main issue that Honorable Grunewald raised. Paul O'Sullivan is the complainant in this case. Now, whistleblowers, including police officers, went to him to make statements which were taken at a police station. He has knowledge of the offences. He raised the complaint whilst the rest of us were in suspension with the acting executive director, Khamanyani, in March of 2016. Mr. Khamanyani took it upon himself to go and discuss the issue with General Patlani. General Patlani denied here before the House and in public that he was aware of an investigation. This is patently false. We have documentary proof that not only was he informed about it, but General Patlani's own signatures in a document asking his PA in response to Khamanyani wanting to discuss this case with him, an instruction to his PA to schedule the meeting. And that's as early as June 2016. So the fact that he alleges he didn't know is that there's an investigation against him is untrue. The second issue relating to O'Sullivan, unfortunately for General Patlani, we have recordings of every interview that and transcripts. At no stage did any of the two civilians who were assisting with the investigation falsely present themselves or present themselves as IPED investigators or as police officers. The person leading the investigation, Mandla Mahlangu, is an experienced IPED investigator. His investigations have resulted in long years for criminal, corrupt and murderous police officers, including life sentences. I have the utmost respect and integrity for him and his ability. Police officers know him. He does his job. So it's untrue that we've employed O'Sullivan and or his company, that he is an IPED investigator, because he is not. On these arrests, which happened at very strange occasions, one was a Friday night, a lawyer was arrested, tied with cable ties, driven around for hours, and then taken to a police station, not allowed to contact family or lawyers. And then O'Sullivan is arrested in contravention of a standing court order. Okay. So how did this all come about? Well, when the investigation started against Patlani falsely claimed that there was a security breach of his house. And even if there was a security breach or he felt threatened by being investigated, he should have called in protection services. He did no such thing. Rather, he called in a unit from Northwest, a unit known to be involved in torture and death of suspects. In fact, the case Mr. Sissoko was referring to, some of the people who are in this unit, headed by Mabula, are suspects in the death of a suspect in Macau, where a suspect was suffocated and tortured to death. It's the same unit that, in a Clerkstorp matter, members of the same unit, which were chosen specifically by General Patlani to disrupt our investigation, were involved in a torture of suspects, a number of suspects, three dockets, in Clerkstorp. Why would General Patlani chose such a unit to deal with this matter? Why, if they needed O'Sullivan to go before court, didn't they summon him to court and charge him specifically? Why didn't they take a statement from IPED or the IPED investigator of what transpired at those interviews? Those basic questions. Now, as I've said with other cases, there isn't a snowball in hell's chance that those claims of falsely impersonating IPED officers would ever stand up in court, because it simply did not happen. Now, I'm not sure why, maybe honorable members can say, why is it easy to target O'Sullivan? The issue here is Patlani's corrupt relationship. It's not who assists us with our investigation. Let's be clear on that. No amount of obfuscation will change the facts that we have before us. And we have the facts. I don't like doing this, but we have the facts and the figures, which is actually frightening that this can carry out with impunity, with political support. And just on the question of political support, I enjoy complete political support on this matter, where it matters. So I think that's as far as I would go. I'll ask Mr. Sissoko to fill in gaps that I've left out.
Thank you, Edie. Mr. Sissoko.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. I think the issue of Mr. Paul O'Sullivan's involvement in our investigation is clarified. And it is not peculiar only to IPED, even the police do that. When you have a complainant that has information regarding a crime, there is nothing in law that bar you from using your complainant to obtain that information and assisting you in getting any information required to advance your investigation. Now, the fact of the matter is, any information that comes from whichever quarter on our investigation, we take that information. We will obviously validate that information. So if it's alleged that a witness has made a statement, we do not take a statement on a face value. There has to be a consultation with the witness, with a statement, taken through the statement, to ascertain if the witness is aware of the statement and the contents thereof, if he agrees to that. If the statement is confirmed, if it's commissioned, our investigator will depose his own statement to confirm that. If the statement is not commissioned, our investigator will then commission the statement by ensuring that the witness takes the necessary oath for that statement. So that is how any investigation will proceed when there is such a situation. The fact of the matter is, Paul O'Sullivan is not contracted to IPED, either as a service provider or as an investigator for IPED. That is completely not true. Do we get information for investigative purposes from Paul O'Sullivan? Yes, we definitely do. Do we follow up on that information? Yes, we do. And more often than never, the information checks out. You cannot ignore that. We are not saying General Patlani is guilty of an offense. It's not our role. Our role is to investigate and present evidence. What we are saying is that what we have, based on what the investigations we've done so far, relating to the vehicles, the house, everything, it just does not add up. It just does not add up. And therefore, it requires us to investigate that. Once we've done with our investigation, we'll present that to the competent authority, who will make a decision whether General Patlani should be prosecuted or not. It's not for us to decide that. But we are saying, without any contradiction, that what we have so far suggests that there is some wrongdoing, or at least needs some explanation. Our investigators went to General Patlani and had an interview with him. General Patlani did not submit a statement. And when asked questions, he said he would want us to give him written questions. We said we'll oblige and do that. There was an issue of the radio that was in the media. He said he has provided proof. He did not provide proof to IPID. He provided IPID with an email that says he has instructed his bankers to pay for the radios. That, for investigative purposes, cannot be regarded as proof. We still have to get bank statements to prove that, yes, there was such a transaction that went through his accounts and so forth. We had evidence that says he has received these equipments from a client of the radio company, which is that client was Criminalistic, which is a service provider to the SAPS. And the person who was responsible for the payment, or who was listed at least as a reference for the payment, was a member of that company. Invariably, in terms of investigation, that's why we had to get a search warrant to confirm that these things were in fact in his house. We're not evidentiative. We never said we would want to remove these items from his house. All of what we did was to say we want to confirm these items are at his property, and that's what we did. And the search warrant was lawfully obtained. As members will be aware that there is a current litigation on this matter. So we won't talk much on it because it still has to be ventilated in our courts. So this is the reality of our investigation. Now, there's a question, when are we going to complete the investigation? We would want to complete the investigation like yesterday. The reality of our investigation is that as we investigate, we get information from different quarters, police officers, members of the public, that come with information to us to allege further things that we still have to look at. Corruption, by its nature, is a complex investigation. So part of what we must do is get experts to do a forensic auditing analysis of the volume of information we have so that they can make all the linkages that need to be made for prosecution purposes. So we cannot give the committee an answer that we will complete the investigation tomorrow. We are also guided by the National Prosecuting Authority on this investigation. So we are sure that whatever we're doing compliant to our laws. Thank you, Chair.
No, Chair, I will be brief. I'll be very brief on this. I think that Chair and the presentation as to, or the account, put it that way, around Paul O'Sullivan, we hear that he is actually a complainant. That's what you're telling us. And therefore, his involvement in this matter, I don't know how many matters, is that of a complainant assisting you with the information for your investigation. I think we should accept that the point you're making, but also make a rider to that point, that a complainant into a particular matter does not necessarily form a team of investigators. There's that rumor that goes around. So I think we should put it to you that I think we take that and we accept that explanation. But there are parameters that are observed in the situation of complainant and those that are investigating the matters. Of course, we have 100% access to a complainant with information. So So this is just for me, the cautionary note, because I can see the way in which you present it. And I don't want us to go there. That's right that you must use it, but I just want to draw the line that observe those lines in the process of conducting the investigation. That's only my point. I'm not going to ask the question because I think that the view has been canvassed sufficiently. But I just want to leave you with that.
Thank you, Honorable Robert Akane. Honorable
Kyung. No, thank you very much, Chair. Now, Chair, maybe the first one will be on my part a question to say, does the IPID get cooperation from members of the Finance Intelligence Center in order to be able to trace a movement of these brown or black bags of money and all these things resulting into this? And coupled to that is a question, Chairperson, which worries me in terms of people whom we appoint to key positions, whether then sufficient, I'll say that, which I think is our collective duty as the committee and also the authorities up there, what you call evaluation of what you call this thing of one's capability, what you call this thing, man? Your survival levels. There is this term that you use, lifestyle audit, sufficient lifestyle audit in order to enhance, in order to be able to get. You will know that, for example, I'm raising this, Chairperson, because we have this similar problem with the unfortunately late Commissioner of Police, Comrade Chikiseleve. There was a serious conflation of issues around this thing. Now, whether then, and that will leave a lot of stain, black stain, to the entire intelligence services of our country, whether then they are doing their job correctly and effectively in ensuring that they assist whoever that is involved, because we are not police as we are here. And also IPID as a civilian organ will definitely rely on the same in order to. But that was the question to say, do you get kind of support from these people? Then the last one, Chairperson, will be a hard question.
Honorable, just very brief, because
I'm quick. This is the last one, Chairperson. To say, guided by you, Chairperson, whether then it will not exacerbate conflict and unnecessary tension to keep those people who are being investigated in the position of command whilst there are these serious allegations, and whether then, even only if we just say, IPID must go and fry, I think it will be a serious dereliction of duty of this committee, even only if we cannot simply say, what is our standpoint with, insofar as those that are actually then mentioned here to be subject of investigation, not necessarily to say there is any passing of any kind of judgment. But even only if you are saying you are investigating me, yet you leave me in the position of command of power, then you are actually then saying to the one who is investigating me, must go and fry.
Thanks, Jay. Just very quickly, I know we're short on time. As a partial follow-up, having received the clarification from Mr. Sissoko that Mr. O'Sullivan is the complainant and not as was partly framed in the media, parts of the investigating team, then at the very least, his arrest which it's been noted was in contravention of a court order, would at the very least constitute intimidation in the context of an investigation and interfering with that. So if I can just get a very quick point as to what is the planned follow-up or response from the IPED in that regard. Thanks.
Mula, you raised your hand.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got one question. You know what, Chairperson, I can't understand because they are talking about Paul O'Sullivan. I want to ask a question because last time when we were with General Patlan, he told us that when you went to General Patlan's house, we were driving Paul O'Sullivan's car. Is it true or not, the investigators, not you, the investigators, is it true or not? And what I want to understand, who is this Paul O'Sullivan? Because I can't get the straight answer. Who is he? Thank you, Chairperson.
Right, members, that is the questions, because the ring, the bell's going to ring in the next 5 minutes, so we'll have to go over. Let's get the final responses, just maybe again, the issue of systemic corruption, station level. And the other responses is Edie.
Thanks, Chairperson. For the purposes of IPED, Paul O'Sullivan is a complainant who has information of a crime and is assisting us with that information. If he was driving a car or someone else was driving a car, your indication was it was me. I can tell you I was not on the scene at all. Maybe it's going to be a crime scene. I was not there. But the issue of Honorable Mbele, the issue of what does it constitute, the two arrests, the one on a Friday night and the one on Monday afternoon. In terms of all the information before us, it's an attempt to disrupt our investigation, it's intimidation, and it's in contravention of Section 33 of the IPED Act. There's already a defeating ends of justice case, which is based on the fact, not disputed, that General Patlani phoned people not to cooperate with us. And we have statements to that effect. Mr. Sissoko.
Thank you, Chair. I think my only short comment on the issue, Chairperson, is that the Constitutional Court judgment provided that within 24 months there must be a repeal of amendment to the IPED Act. I think it gives us and the committee an opportunity to look at the problematic areas, because our concern is that it cannot be that every time we start an investigation, especially against senior members, then there is an approach to our witnesses to try and deflect or interfere with the investigation. Or IPED officials are targeted with other allegations just because they are doing these investigations. So we must find a way to look at how that issue we deal with. You know, if there are issues about IPED in terms of how we investigate, you know, we could have looked at provisions like in the DPCI where there is a judge who looks at, you know, how we do our investigation, if that is an issue, rather than having people interfering with our investigation to the detriment of these investigations we are doing. Chairperson, with regard to the questions you raised on the systemic corruption, currently we've approved 6 systemic corruption matters in different provinces where investigations are underway. Thank you.
Right, that is then the end of today's meeting. Maybe a final word from my side. I think we take note of the presentation. I think it's important that we maybe get a written copy of that. I think it's also important that the ED must provide info notes with regard to the matter of the Acting National Commissioner to the appointing authority as well as the Minister. It's important. And from an oversight point of view, we as the committee will monitor developments as it goes along. And I think it's important if there's any further developments that IPED must then come to the committee and brief us. and then we will see them on the 15th of March in relation to the Farlam Commission progress report. Thank you, members. We will meet next Wednesday, 9 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Thank you.